Hey guys, before we get into the show, just want to inform you guys that the Wisecrack Movie Podcast has now officially launched. It's called Show Me the Meaning, and you can find it on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you usually get your stuff. So be sure to check it out, leave us a review, and send us an email at movies@wisecrack.co for requests on what movies you want us to cover. Thanks a lot, and on to Respect Our Thor Talk. Everyone, welcome to Respect Our Authorita, Wisecrack's South Park podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined here by Wisecrack's video editor, Ryan.
Howdy ho.
And a writer and director, Mike Lux.
Hello.
And another writer and director for Wisecrack, Amanda Shirker.
Hey, hey.
So last night was the premiere of South Park Season 21, Episode 9, entitled Super Hard PC-ness. And as always, we're going to go around and get some first impressions. Let's start backwards this time. Let's start with Amanda. Amanda, what did you think?
I'm gonna go with a C minus because like
C minus.
Yeah, I laughed a lot, but I didn't think it was their smartest take on the cultural moment, if you will.
All right, Lux, what do you think?
I'd go B minus because I laughed a lot, but I didn't think it was their smartest take on the cultural moment. But I like to laugh a lot.
And Ryan, what'd you think?
What's higher than A? I fucking loved it. I loved it so much, man.
Really?
Yeah, just like doubling down, it touched me, and also I laughed a lot. So that combination, A+. Loved it.
Yeah, I'm going with Ryan here. I don't know if I'll give it an A+, but I'm going to give it a solid A. I definitely laughed a number of times. I didn't laugh as much as perhaps the Jack and Crack episode, but I think that this is a super interesting episode, very dense, and I'm really excited to talk to you guys about it. And in terms of, is it the smartest take on the cultural moment? I think it could be, but that's why I want to break it down with you guys.
I liked it. Yeah. I liked its take on the cultural moment.
Yeah, I think that definitely one of the plots, I think that the Kyle subplot is more interesting than the Strong Woman subplot, although I'm very excited for the character of Strong Woman, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to see her in ensuing seasons and episodes.
And Misconduct.
And Misconduct. but before we dive into all that, let me go into a recap. So, the episode starts at Netflix, where old Terrence and Philip pitch a Netflix original series to a very eager executive who, of course, immediately greenlines it. Meanwhile, Cartman and Heidi are physically brawling in the hallways of Skule. I'm fucking that up. And it becomes apparent that this is part of an ongoing trend of meanness at South Park Elementary. Kyle tries to break it up and encourage everyone to be nice, but this just backfires and makes him the target of an ongoing Kyle is like his mom joke. In order to remedy the bullying and insensitivity in the school, PC Principal decides to hire a strong female role model to be Vice Principal. Enter Vice Principal Strong Woman, who, like PC Principal, is well-versed in her own brand of call-out culture. Kyle watches the new Terrence and Phillip special on Netflix and finds himself no longer laughing at cruel humor. He starts to feel for the characters being farted on since, arguably, he is the one being metaphorically farted on in school. Eventually, he takes a long look in the mirror, renounces his love for Terrence and Phillip, and devotes himself to making a positive change. How? Well, by echoing his mom in the South Park movie and pinning all of society's ills on the crude show everyone has been raised on, Terrence and Phillip. PC Principal falls in love with Strong Woman, but since having feelings in the workplace is playing with fire these days, he fights his emotions tooth and nail. He confesses his struggle to Mackie, who shuns him and brings the HR woman in to set things straight. Meanwhile, Kyle creates the eerily familiar Millennials Against Canada, and when arguing with the Canadian Minister of Streaming on television, threatens to take the argument to the president. Back at school, the HR worker turns out to be a very Mackie-esque woman named Misconduct. Her and Mackie have some very sweet chemistry. Kyle storms the set of Terrence and Phillip, and with his army of Mac hipsters, shuts the episode down. When the Canadians appeal to President Garrison to save Canada's most valuable export, the situation quickly escalates to threats of military action. President Garrison appeals to Kyle to stop the shenanigans before war breaks out, but Kyle won't listen. Meanwhile, while readying the school for a nuclear disaster, PC Principal and Strong Woman share a tender moment when their hands accidentally touch, and Kyle looks on horrified as Trump nukes Canada. End of episode. So, the first thing I want to break, well, first of all, I kind of want to hear what Ryan loved so much about the episode before we start breaking down some of the smart things going on in this episode. So Ryan, what resonated with you so much about this?
It was really just the whole Kyle subplot of it coming back around to the Mothers Against Canada, like in the South Park movie. Just that whole, the whole concept of millennials, you know, going so far, some millennials going so far in the other direction that basically they become like old moms. That whole thing I just thought was kind
old
of
Jewish,
like,
mothers, yeah,
yeah. Right? I mean,
yeah, so it, Ryan, you often call me out for saying that, oh, I don't think that the show is as meta as you
this
say
is the
it
most
is,
meta episode
but
ever.
This is super meta. And right. We've discussed earlier in this podcast of how Kyle can oftentimes be a mouthpiece for the show and how the show is often commenting on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you consider the context of the South Park movie and how the Terrence and Phillip movie was a stand-in for the South Park movie, I think it's unavoidable to talk about how Matt and Trey may be reflecting on not only the way that the show has been consumed, but the legacy of the show.
Oh, yeah. Totally. This is the most... I thought about that a lot during the episode. I was like, God, Jared's has a huge meta boner right now for the show. Like, they are just talking about themselves in, like, a million different layers. It's great.
Yeah. So, before we get into that, let me just break down for those of you who have not seen the... not the Terrence and Phillip movie. The South Park movie recently. I mean, it has been almost 20 years since it's come out. So, just as a recap, in the South Park movie, the kids go see the movie Terrence and Phillip Asses of Fire, which is a meta stand-in for the show South Park and the South Park movie. So in the film, the kids go see an R-rated, way cruder version of their favorite obscene TV show, Terrence and Phillip, just as we, the audience, went to see the South Park movie, which was a way cruder version of an already crude TV show, South Park. So the ensuing plotline about censorship reflected the current discussion, or at least the discussion back then, about censorship and especially the show. So the film Terrence and Phillip Asses of Fire within the South Park movie compels the children to start saying bad words like fuck and causes Kenny to kill himself by lighting a fart on fire. Therefore, the mothers of South Park create Mothers Against Canada, in which they blame all their children's problems on the show Terrence and Phillip. So similarly, in this episode, Kyle creates Millennials Against Canada and blames Terrence and Phillip for all the ills at school. And I don't know if you guys noticed, I love the South Park movie. I've seen it so many times.
Me too.
I rather douchily said in our last Rick and Morty episode that I think it's the best musical since Singing in the Rain. And I maintain that opinion. But the scene between Kyle and the Minister of Streaming is virtually identical to the scene in the South Park movie between Kyle's mom. You know, it says outraged millennial in this version. In the original movie, it says outraged mother. The Canadian Minister of Streaming is basically saying the exact same thing as the Canadian Minister of Television. Very clear call out to the movie. And then the last thing I'll recognize before I open it up to ask you guys some questions. So just as at the end of the South Park movie, Sheila recognized how she ended up making more problems when she started a war over this. Similarly, Kyle realizes he's created more problems instead of actually wanting to help the world when he sees Canada get nuked. So first, I want to say, so if we are to suggest that there is this meta element going on, which I think there's a very strong argument to be made that it is, if the parents were pointing their finger at Canada to mask the fact that they were bad or irresponsible parents, what is Kyle avoiding by, like, kind of scapegoating Terrence and Phillip the show?
Well, that was where I kind of felt like the metaphor fell apart a little bit, because it turned out that he was orchestrating this whole thing because he was angry that Heidi went with Cartman. I didn't really get what they were trying to say. It kind of felt like they were, like, it's interesting that they were citing the movie from almost 20 years ago, because it felt like they were rehashing a point that they've, like, over, I feel like they were arguing for, like, the 100th time, like, we're not going to stop telling fart jokes, like, just because it's controversial, when it's like nobody is complaining about South Park being too controversial anymore. Like, right?
I think some people do, but I don't think that was their main point. Their main point was just that we've cycled back to there being kind of a form of censor, or people asking for censorship on, you know, through media, and it's a different set of demographics this time.
I think there's that, and I think that part of that I found really interesting was that it's a less principled set of people, right? Kyle's mom has, like, a very clear, like, this is why we're doing this, and this is why we care, and this is what we want. And then when Kyle gets pressed on those questions, he's like, I don't want to censor it. I just don't want it, and I don't want people to get yelled at for not liking it, and like doesn't have quite the same rigidity, which does, I
think,
mirror...
And they're critiquing that. Like, like you think the show is critiquing that, that people just don't like stuff that they're pretty much uncomfortable with in a way, and also... Then he also says, you know, I just want to live in a world where people aren't farted on and we can all laugh at no one else's expense, which I think is a genuine thing that some millennials feel, right?
Yeah, I want to kind of turn to talking about the Kyle's transformation scene when he's looking at himself in the reflection of the lake and he looks at himself in the mirror. I don't know. How do you guys read this? Because part of me was wondering, is this the show looking at itself in the mirror, or is this just a commentary about how millennials are becoming so self-aware that, you know, even Schadenfreude itself is no longer an acceptable form of humor? And then I, of course, want to go back to the conclusion of the last season and say, you know, is comedy dead? Are we in a post-funny era of satire because we're so self-aware and we're so concerned with feeling safe and, you know, making us feel like we're doing good things that we don't even really care about? Well, I think that's a separate point, but... What do you guys think?
Well, I don't think in this episode you can really position Kyle as the mouthpiece for the show, because Terrence and Philip are so clearly a stand-in for South Park. And there's a certain degree to which, like, they, not everything on the show can be a stand-in for the show. Like, they have to draw the line somewhere.
I agree, but I don't... But Terrence and Philip are super old, and they're doing regular fart jokes. It's a show that has not evolved, and I don't think you can say that about South Park. I'm with you, Lux. I'm confused as to what the stand-in is and what isn't. I mean, Matt and Trey are not selling a Netflix show. They're not selling out to, you know, doing the same thing over and over again.
Well, I think the Netflix show is more of a device, and I think Terrence and Phillip do stand in for South Park in the sense that, like, you think about, like, I don't know how much you guys, like, read or engage with, like, Twitter or, like, the South Park review universe or whatever, but...
5%.
Okay, cool. I'm glad you have a number for
or
it.
Less.
That's very good. But a lot of those people are like, have Matt and Trey gotten old? Have they lost their edge? Do they know what they're doing anymore? Like, how do they handle this stuff? Some of the criticisms that we even have here about, like, how do they understand the world around them, stuff like that. That's like a pretty persistent piece of criticism that exists in the world.
I don't think, though, that it's current. It's like them saying that now they're old. I think that the Terrence and Phillip show in this episode stands in for old South Park. Like,
yeah, maybe it's even old South Park
stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like, Kyle's all like, you know, like, yeah, we were raised on this stuff. Like, and it used to be all, you know, it was just fart jokes and stuff. But now I feel bad about it. So. To me, it's like a little bit of a reflection, them saying, you know, yeah, this show started out as just a bunch of fart jokes, you know.
I agree with Lux. I do think there are definitely plenty of elements of Terrence and Phillip, the old Terrence and Phillip, that are representative of the show of South Park. But I don't think, I guess I agree with Amanda in that the metaphor is just not precise. And I think that some of it is Kyle and some of it is Terrence and Phillip. It's not a clear one-to-one. It's not super precise.
And I feel like also, like, I was drawing... connections for me, at least, to, like, comedians who, you know, like, it's difficult to watch an old Louis C.K. special now because his jokes about masturbation, you're like, oh, there's actually a real life basis in, like, women who were hurt by his chronic masturbation. So it's like, I feel like the metaphor, I feel like it would have been more interesting if, like, Terrence or Philip had, say, like, a sex scandal, and it's like, can we still watch their fart jokes and enjoy it? Because that would feel more of the moment to me than this, which is saying that we're suddenly banning things that we used to like. And I'm like racking my brain. What are we banning that we used to like? Right? I don't know.
To me, it's the idea that we're becoming more puritanical by censoring. The argument's been made.
Well, I think I don't know if it's becoming more puritanical necessarily, but there definitely is, like, a cottage industry of, like, Tumblr pieces about why X or Y or Z show that we used to love as kids is now a problem when we really think about it as, like, adults who are informed about the way the world works.
Yeah, Funny or Die has an entire, like, their most successful Facebook format is just talking about how a certain character from Saved by the Bell is now problematic. Yeah.
Right, but I feel like it's not saying, like, this piece of like, I don't think that the argument, I feel like a lot of times it comes from like a loving place where you're also like that new documentary, The Problem with Apu. Like, I think the comedian actually really likes The Simpsons, but he's just talking about like a painful experience from like, I don't feel like it's such a, it's a bad thing to go back and analyze like what we liked as kids as more aware people. I don't know.
So I think there's a difference between like The Problem with Apu, which is like an amazing thing made by a super smart person who did a lot of work, and like a Tumblr that's like, hey, did you realize Scooby-Doo is like a horrible analogy for mean children or whatever? Like, I think that you're right that there are versions of that that are really good, but there are also, I think Ryan's also equally correct that there are versions of that that are like kind of puritanical and gross. I think both exist. I think South Park is very much talking to the second, not the first, which is like a knife's edge distinction, but I think that it's like a semi-relevant one.
So let me share my interpretation of what this is, and I want to point out a particular line here. So this is when Stan calls Kyle, and Stan tells him, dude, you're taking this too far. You're exactly like your mother. So Kyle says, oh, I'm sorry, I'm taking a stand and doing something. I realize this doesn't gel with your nihilism. And then Stan says, okay, dude, I didn't want to have to say this, but you're really starting to sound like your mom. And then Kyle says, I'm not like my mom. I'm going to make a difference. It's going to feel real good. That line, it's going to feel real good. This is why I interpret this episode, at least as to what Matt and Trey are saying, is that I think this episode explores a deep pathology that is kind of at the core of a lot of today's interactions. And there's a very resentful, vicious behavior in which people will ruthlessly tear people down in the name of feeling like they're doing good or in the name of feeling safe. That's how I interpreted Kyle's actions.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do see some of that. Like, that is sort of the Heidi thing as well. Right. Or the Kyle's relationship with Heidi in the context of all this stuff is that same kind of thing where like Kyle's presenting himself as doing a good thing, but it's like clearly very self-indulgent. And you can sort of see that even become kind of clear when he talks to a strong woman and she's like, you're gonna blame this on farts? Like, isn't that dumb? And you can tell that like he kind of also knows that it's dumb, but he's doing it to affirm himself. And you see a lot of people out in the world doing that. Saying like, I mean, the thing that I think I've talked about in this podcast before is like there was that book that got published that was like about why racism is bad, but it was like a fantasy novel and it had people doing racist stuff because racist stuff is bad and they were trying to show it. And then like people freaked out and got it like pulled from the shelves for, quote, being racist, which was just like people just trying to like feel good about themselves, trying to make a difference in the world at without no real regard for like who they hurt or why they were doing it.
I feel like it's something that they've done a few times where they kind of say, you know, like, is our show having a negative effect on the world, and kind of conclude like, no, people who say it is are being too sensitive, which I obviously love South Park, but it kind of bugs me when like TV shows, you know, I feel like Jon Stewart did this a lot where he was like, I'm just for fun, when it's like, no, you're actually like the most trusted news source. And I feel like when Kyle, I didn't actually believe Strong Woman's response to Kyle, because I actually do think that someone like her would understand that media does affect the way people interact.
So let me just read that line so people are aware of what exactly we're talking about. So Kyle comes to Strong Woman and says, I've come because I believe I can offer some insight into some of our problems here. You see, there's a culture at this school that embraces meanness, and I believe now that it comes from a Canadian TV show. All the boys watch it. I did too. We all laughed while they farted on innocent people's heads. The thing is, I never felt for the people being farted on until now. I want to work with you to try to open people's eyes because I get it now. And then Strong Woman says, you want to blame farts? That sounds a little ridiculous. It's a slippery slope when we start pointing a finger at people for our own shortcomings. And then Kyle's like, oh, I thought you would be the one person that would agree with me. And she said, actually, it kind of sounds like something my mother would say. So I agree, Amanda, that I do think this is like a paranoid guilt of the show, but I don't think that they let themselves off completely. I think that the show is reflecting on people that claim that South Park ruined a generation. By the way, someone earlier, I think maybe it was Amanda, asked, like, is anybody actually saying that about South Park? And I don't know about larger publications or larger South Park community fan forums or something like that. But just in terms of our own personal work, some of the Facebook videos about South Park that we've posted, some of our YouTube videos, there have been comments of people saying that South Park is trash. It ruined a generation. It created like an army of, I don't know if necessarily they're saying alt-right, but basically just an army of shitty people. And here's my next question. If, in fact, as we all have said, that if Kyle's mom in the movie was scapegoating Terrence and Phillip because she was not a good parent or she was not attentive enough to communicate with Kyle, then, as we agreed, Kyle in this episode is scapegoating Terrence and Phillip because he can't handle the fact that he lost to Cartman. He lost Heidi. And we've seen how all the characters, including Heidi, have become kind of these amorphous metaphors. At one point, she's the alt-right. At one point, is Heidi the guilt that the show feels for some of their fans turning into real-life Cartmans?
I hadn't thought of that, yes. But I think that's a pretty fair read.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I think that checks out.
I think they would like that interpretation. I think that's smart.
Yeah. I mean,
so basically what I'm saying, Amanda, is I don't think that they're letting themselves off the hook. I think that Kyle looking at himself in the mirror and Kyle looking at his reflection in the lake is them still struggling, still looking at themselves. I mean, Ryan has told me multiple times that, yeah, I don't really like this season. It's so not funny sometimes. It's very uneven. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's bad. And in a strange meta way, I know I'm getting meta again, but I kind of like that. I like that the show is kind of a reflection of how awkward it is to create comedy, to create real satire. It's almost impossible to, you know, come up with any real... It's almost impossible to make comedy without offending someone.
Without farting on someone.
Without farting on someone, exactly. And so they're constantly looking themselves in the mirror, looking at how shitty the world is and saying, did we have a part in this? Maybe not. Maybe we did. Basically, I'm just saying I don't think they let themselves off the hook as much as...
Well,
what was suggested.
And to your point, Amanda, that was another part that touched me when you said you didn't buy Strong Woman's response. I mean, to me, it was like, oh, awesome. She is supposed to, you know, she is this self-aware person that doesn't buy the bullshit. In my opinion, this is me, Ryan, talking of people blaming today's society, you know, cultural shittiness on an old TV show, you know, which I think that. To me, that's the more progressive point of view, is that you can say, all right, let's be sensitive to people, but also let's have personal responsibility in there and not fucking blame shit on the past as much, or at least, yeah.
And I mean, obviously the scene itself, Kyle is clearly being somewhat ridiculous, but like the way he's telling the narrative is really silly. I just more see it as them saying that, like, that's what a... I don't agree that, like, we can say that shows don't have effects on people, I guess.
And I don't think they're saying that either. I don't think that they feel that way. I think this is a show in crisis, is what we're seeing. You know, almost like really like a moral kind of ethical crisis that Matt and Trey have no idea what to do.
I feel like it's kind of like, how do we make comedy as white men now, to be honest? Because like you were saying, like, is the death of comedy, and in terms of like female comedians and like comedians of color, like it's absolutely like the first time we've ever even heard them on a national stage. But it is a different time for white male comedians, definitely. And I feel like some of that is being reflected, for sure.
I think there's that. I also think there's, you've talked about this before, Jared, sort of in this idea of like the era we live in its relationship to satire. And I think another thing that's not just like, are we post-funny, but also like, I tried earlier today after I saw the episode, because I had this vibe that like, there are too many things for them to do a show about. Like every week there's 97 South Park worthy things that go down in the news. Like every 20 minutes, there's something you could do 20 minutes on of a South Park episode. And it feels like some episodes, and this is one of my issues with this episode, that they try to just like talk about every single goddamn thing at once. And I feel like sometimes they get overloaded and overstretch themselves. And I think that's another thing they're struggling with. Like, I think, Amanda, you're spot on with this. Like, how do you be funny as a white man in a world where like that's all there has been for like 200 fucking years. But I also think that there's like just too much shit. Like there's just so much incredibly stupid shit happening in the world that like they have to talk about a lot of it. And that sometimes like overwhelms the show. And I think right now they're trying to process like, how do we even pick what to do? And like you saw that with Terrence and Phillip, like they fart on like a bunch of different kinds of people.
It's
a black girl scout.
A black girl scout and a Mexican with, what does he have, chimichangas?
Yeah. Like you can see like they just like are, they're doing the same thing where they like are bouncing around to a bunch of things for like whatever reason. Like I just feel like the show is, it's overwhelmed by choice. There's just too many options at the all you can eat buffet of like shitty life.
Take a hard, long look in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so on the one hand, we do see that Terrence and Phillip being old are kind of old Matt and Trey with their, I guess, what you guys are calling, but I wouldn't necessarily call old white men humor. And then, but also we agree that Kyle is very much also sort of a stand-in for the show and that he takes a hard, long look at himself. But also Kyle is a stand-in for, you know, millennial dispositions toward comedy and sensitivity and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a dense, convoluted, but still pretty insightful episode, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I liked both. That was my thing. I liked both plots. I found it frustrating that they didn't really connect in a meaningful way. And then I also found it like neither plot got enough time. And I guess like maybe this is a two-parter, so this might all get resolved next week. Is that true? This is a two-parter?
I think it's going to be.
Probably. It's the season finale next week.
Yeah, and I mean, last time we thought something was a two-parter, it super wasn't, but... But yeah, I mean, I just thought that neither plotline got enough time to do. I think they were trying to do interesting things. I think neither one got enough time to, at least for me, do enough. Like, I thought they were both really good ideas and had a lot of good jokes, but like they just didn't have the time to do everything they needed to do to make me give a shit.
I loved watching Heidi and Cartman beat the shit out of each other, especially while he was saying, sweetheart, you know, like in between punches.
I fucking laughed. I love the Hootie and the Blowfish hold my hand.
Oh, really?
Montage.
See, I did not think that was funny.
I was laughing my ass off. I love that song, too.
I'm just kind of sick. I'm kind of sick of jokes where it's like, oh, you think that this is a non-diegetic song, but. Like,
I actually thought
you.
They
it's
did a pretty they innovated that with that scene whenever Mackie was like, does anyone hear a really soft Hootie?
Well, that's just how they do it in, I mean, that's how they do it in Deadpool, you know, with like stop the music, or they've done it in Rick and Morty. It's just like it's, I mean, I'm just tired of it.
For to Amanda's how do you do comedy as an old white man anymore point, you know, Kyle's millennials activist group are all very deliberately like white hipster dudes.
Oh, super hipster.
Yeah, which I, you know, what are they saying there, Jared?
Well, I think that, you know, there is this pressure on white men who don't want to feel guilty to do things in the name of, like, they have to prove that, hey, I'm not the bad guy, and usually that's through things like call out culture or...
allies, baby.
Right. So I mean... And once again, at the end of the day, did they do something good? No, they got Canada nuked.
I do think there was like a running thing about like bad allyship in this episode. Like we see it with PC Principal, who keeps interrupting Strong Woman during her like initial address and like undermining her in like ways that seem helpful, but like are definitely not. And then like that's the same thing with Kyle and the Millennials Against Canada. Like they're only acting on what they think is a good idea to stop people's feelings getting hurt and not, you know, engaging with like other people. Right. And I mean, in this case, the people who are getting their feelings hurt are them, but like there are other people who get bullied who aren't white dudes who might have something to say about this. And I think that that's sort of a little, I thought that was an interesting thing about the episode that didn't get leaned into a lot, but I thought there was this really interesting criticism of like people who are shitty at being allies.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny. I read that totally differently. And now we're kind of transitioning to the PC Principal Strong Woman argument. So when we were introduced to PC Principal, I mean, we all agree, right, that he's a caricature and he takes PC too far, right?
I agree.
Right? Like PC
he's
Principal.
He's a very genuine
he's a caricature.
Person, though.
I mean, right. But when Strong Woman, when PC Principal shuns Butters for talking during the assembly... And Strong Woman says, oh, you think I couldn't handle that myself? like, aren't we supposed to read that as, oh, she's just like PC Principal in that, you know, she's kind of turning chivalry into sexism and it's, you know, like, are we supposed to say like, oh, wow, she's totally right.
I think it's great. An awesome scene because you totally see both sides. You see like PC Principal trying to help the best he can. But then Strong Woman being like, dude, come on, like I can, you can, I empathize with her too. Like I, and then, I don't think she ever takes it too far. You think she's going to, but then, like I
she
said,
definitely
before,
has redeeming qualities.
She takes her, she kind of becomes more reasonable.
No, like
later.
Both PC Principal and Strong Woman are, I guess I want to
have
say
good intentions.
Complex character, yeah. Complex caricatures, because PC Principal at the end of season 19 ends up being a good guy. He does some very benevolent things throughout the series. We see in this episode that Strong Woman is the voice of reason that tells Kyle, you know, I don't think you should be blaming social ills on farts, because obviously you're dealing with some personal issues, which he later reveals to be the whole Heidi Cartman thing. But I do think that... yeah, I guess you could see it both ways. But for example, I think she definitely takes it too far when Mackie is introducing her and she says, I know that some of you don't know whether to call me Mrs. Strong or Mrs. Woman. Mm-hmm. If I were a man, I'd probably be ABCD. I think this is meant to be like we're supposed to roll our eyes. There's supposed to be an element of PC Principal and an element of Strong Woman that is taking these, you know, this call out culture thing too far. These are not symbols of perfect behavior.
And that was when I didn't get her. I felt like there were just a lot of inconsistencies, because a woman who says, like, you think I can't handle this assembly on my own, wouldn't also stand there waiting for PC Principal to open the door. Like, that is completely inconsistent. Like, in a character.
I didn't get that she was, because she put her hand on the knob first, right?
No, it was that PC Principal stops her and says, hey, before we open this door, I just want to warn you that if I open this door for you, it may reflect some gender inequality issues, which, of course, we're supposed to look at this and say, this is fucking retarded that we're even having this conversation. Just open the goddamn door.
Right, but Amanda's saying that she was waiting for him to open the door.
What I mean is that, like, the same character in my eyes would say, what are you talking about? Nukes are going off. I don't care if you open the door or not. I won't be affected. Like, that's just absurd. And I feel like it made me kind of annoyed, because I feel like that's the kind of thing that, like, people who make fun of feminism think feminists do. And that just isn't, like, she wouldn't have, I don't know, any, whatever.
Well, look, I mean, once again, PC Principal reflects some of the negative things about PC culture, and Strong Woman will probably reflect some of the negative things about feminism.
But there are negative things about everything, and South Park
is a show written by some assholes, so they're going to poke fun at everything.
But
cultural.
Like we were saying also before, that they have redeeming qualities, you know, so
no, I know.
They're not totally shitting on them, just like
PC culture and feminism have redeeming
qualities. Exactly. They're making fun of the, you know, cartoony things.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I just think that I read that last scene with them at the door as, like, again, PC Principal's, like, insane adherence to, like, this set of norms of conduct being more problematic than just, like, letting this lady, like, do her damn thing. Right? Like, they're just going for the door. And I think that I don't think she waits for him so much as he just stops her to be like, we need to have this quick conversation about door opening etiquette.
We can all agree that's not a necessary conversation.
Right. And I mean, yes. She honestly, I would have liked the character a lot more if she just like shoved him out of the way and opened the door.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Sure. But I do think that like, I think that in that moment, the character choice plotting wise was on PC Principal ruining everything. And again, it's like, he means well, and he's a genuine dude, and he has one of the funniest animated smiles ever.
Oh my god, that smile is amazing.
And so he's obviously good in a lot of ways, but he's so overzealous that it can become problematic, the same way it was at the meeting, and the same way it is with the door, which I think is an interesting thing
to talk
about.
I agree with you guys, but because at the same time, she puts him in a situation where he has to be overzealous, because he got shunned 3 times for trying to help. And this is another criticism of PC culture, is that intent is not taken into consideration. It doesn't matter that PC Principal was trying to help her, that he was trying to invigorate her message, that he was trying to discipline the kids so that they would listen to her. PC culture, it just doesn't matter. It's you triggered me, therefore I'm offended. And therefore, when you're offended, you're right.
Oh, see, I thought her position was a little bit more nuanced than that. I thought her position was more like, if you really want to like affirm this woman in this role, let her just do the damn thing.
Right, but she didn't. Like, Butters was talking. She didn't say anything.
Well, she didn't get any time.
She didn't get a chance.
Yeah,
we'll never know.
One of life's great unsolved mysteries, I guess.
Yeah, we don't.
I just don't think it was that smart. I just didn't like it, the strong woman thing in general.
I think, but are you excited about the character? I mean, they fuck up and then refine characters later on. I think that she's a promising character.
Yeah, I like her.
You're skeptical?
Yeah, I don't think that, I mean, just judging from this episode, I don't think they're going to handle it that, like, I feel like they have such incisive things to say a lot of the time, and, like, they just didn't about her. And I'm almost like, maybe they can't really make really smart comments about, like, strong women and, like the nuances and, like, contradictions of like, someone who's positioned as a strong woman right now.
I'd say let's give him a chance.
Yeah, I'm willing to chalk up the sort of like mixed characterization of strong woman to this is a 2-part episode, presumably.
Well, also like, are we to believe that strong woman is in fact a strong woman? Like,
yeah.
I mean, but the whole idea of her name being strong woman suggests that, you know, she's not an individual. She's just this, once again, this caricature prototype of the cultural stereotype of a strong woman. So if in fact she's not a strong woman, and if in fact she is not representing the positive parts about feminism, then that's a satirical point in its sense, in itself. I don't think that strong woman has to be a beacon for all the positive things about feminism. She can, but that would, just in the way that PC principle is not a beacon for the positive things about PC culture.
I actually feel like what Lux said rings true, because I agree. I think it actually could be really funny if she was like a female counterpart to PC Principle, but I actually think she was much more like a vessel for his story plot, and that's probably why, like, I didn't really come away with her being particularly satirical.
I agree
like,
with
that. She didn't make any choices, right? You're only a character if you make choices.
And that kind of, like, I kind of was disappointed that it immediately became about her as a romantic object of interest. That was kind of
but
like.
Don't you think, Amanda? But Amanda, don't you think in Hollywood a lot of the strong women characters that are kind of forced down our throats are not in fact strong women?
Sure. I mean,
I guess I
mean, most women and most female Hollywood characters are shitty. So yeah, I would say probably
right.
For sure.
But even when they a lot of times when they attempt to create a strong female character, they just fuck it up, right?
Okay, so you're saying that maybe by making her not a real character. I mean, I think that might be a stretch. I don't know if they were going for that level of commentary.
But
it would be smart if they did.
Right. I agree that in this episode, to your point, it's a little bit contradictory to create a character that promises to be a strong woman, but she ends up just being basically the object of PC Principle's desire to basically propel this storyline about workplace romance.
Right. Right. Which is, yeah.
To piggyback on Jared, what you said about like her sort of being a stand-in and like kind of parodic figure, Stella Clark has a pretty good history of taking characters that appear that way and making them a lot deeper. Like, Chef is way more than a chef. PC Principal has gone way beyond the confines of a principal who is PC. So they do have a decent track record with building these characters up from... I mean, you can even go back to, like, Miss Chokes on Dick. Like, they have a good track record of taking these...
Her.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Rest in peace.
just too many seamen in her stomach. But they have a good track record of taking these, like, kind of cardboard joke characters and making them into a lot more. That's why I'm willing to, like, there's a lot, I'm with Amanda on a lot of these, like, issues of a strong woman, but I am willing to wait at least till the second half of this 2-parter before I'm like, you blew it.
Well, I really, really love the character. I find it very interesting. Or
yeah.
That the three guys liked the character and the one woman did not. But also, I have a hypothetical question for the, we believe this is probably a 2-parter. Does anyone, I cynically... think that either one of two things is going to happen in the next episode. Either all of a sudden PC Principal and Strong Woman are going to have this secret workplace romance, and it's going to you're going to navigate through that, or PC Principal will get accused of sexual harassing or assaulting a strong woman.
And that was
because of the doorknob touch.
That was what kind of also annoyed me, because it's clearly consensual, and I feel like they were kind of vaguely equating workplace romance with, like, or they were saying that there's a really thin line, when I kind of don't feel like the line is that thin. I feel like it's, we're just not used to women having like an active, like women's cues being taken into account, basically. So I feel like if he were to be, that would be really dumb because she was clearly into it.
I feel like that what they're really, I totally get what you're saying, but they're more parodying or commenting on just the feeling that the general vague feeling going through, you know, everyone's mind or a lot of people's mind, just like, all right, what is the line, you know? And which I think is an honest question to ask. I agree that you know, like you said, we're just hearing all this for the first time, so it's kind of just a big shock to the system, and that a lot of it is going on. But it's kind of like that just general vague milieu of what is the line, not people kind of not being sure, because this is a very big cultural touchstone moment right now, and that's kind of what they were going after with this whole thing. Is PC principal the most sensitive person, you know, to this kind of stuff? It's like he even him is kind of like, what is the line, you know, where do I cross, or where am I crossing it?
If I can just perhaps implement a little anecdote here, I mean, once again, I think you're right. This is a show written by men, created by men, so it's probably understandable, or at least for this particular subplot, that it's from a male perspective. So let me just give you an example. Like, we have interns every semester here at Wisecrack, and some of them are female, and some of them are male. A year ago, year and a half ago, I used to give, at the end of the internship, I would give every intern, male or female, a hug. Now I don't do that anymore. I give them handshakes, because I'm not fucking with that. Just plain and simple. So, I mean, I think that's the kind of paranoia that, I mean, I'm dealing with, just because, like, why fuck with it? Why fuck with it?
That's interesting. Because, yeah, that's true, because I don't think of it from that point of view that, yeah, I mean, I can see how they're tapping into a very real anxiety.
Yeah, I do think that's why Ryan, when you said that there's like two possible outcomes, like either he gets accused of sexual harassment or they get together, I really hope it's that they have an illicit workplace romance.
Right.
I think that's like the obvious answer. I thought Ryan was going to say something crazy like Heidi kills Cartman or something like that.
Yeah.
Let's move into the mailbag. I think Lux has some questions picked out.
Yes, I do. And we got, again, every week we just get a ton of super good stuff and more every time. So thank you all for sending stuff in, and I really appreciate it. And we're going to start with Oliver. And Oliver says the following. Fan of the channel and the podcast from the UK. Really enjoying the weekly South Park analysis and discussions, as it gives me a chance to have a deep dive into the topics touched on the show, particularly since my friends are sporadic viewers who enjoy but consider the show mindless fun. I think that most people decide if they like the show or not in their youth when first encountering it, and at that age, you either like the gross-out humor or you don't. The ones that don't never get the chance to decide whether they like the political, social commentary which underlies the plot, since they have discarded the show on face value. My question is, what episode would you show a friend who says they don't like South Park to try and bring them around? Keep up the good work, Oliver. Yeah, it's a really good question. Well, mine is 100% for sure the Tooth Fairy Tats 2000 episode. I think it's one of the weirdest, craziest episodes, which is part of why it appeals to me, but it also has like pretty meticulous plotting and a really good parodic element of like mafia movies, and sort of shows a lot of like the cleverness and weirdness that like the best episodes of South Park have. And if you can get into that episode, then like you should have already been watching the show.
I would show them Scott Tenenbaum Must Die.
That's number two on my list.
Man,
for
that's
sure.
A dark one to start with.
Yeah. if they like that one, they'll like the show.
I'm going to go with the two-parter. I know it's a little bit tough to convince someone to do a two-parter, but hopefully if they like the first half, they'll like the second half of Go God Go, part one and two, because I think millennials or young people these days are really into discussions of God and religion, and I think that it's a really interesting take on that.
All right, so our next one's from Christian. It's another, I think, pretty interesting question. I've been a longtime fan of South Park, and I've come to realize that most episodes tend to fall into two categories. There are episodes that touch on relevant events and use their characters to satirize them, create metaphors and draw parallels. Some of those episodes include Trapped in the Closet, Best Friends Forever, most recently Put It Down. Then there are episodes like Scott Tenenbaum Must Die, The Imagination Land Trilogy, and Casa Bonita that have no topical substance, but instead follow the characters' comedic antics and even occasionally share a resounding message at the end. Then he goes on to ask, what kind of storyline do you prefer to see in a South Park episode, and which past episodes do you think demonstrated that theme the best?
Of course, I'd love to have my pie and eat it too, and I would love it if they can do both, if it's hilarious and really insightful. But really, it just depends on, I love just the pure silly ones. Like one of the ones is the one where there's the marijuana dispensaries and they're all jumping on their giant balls. I mean, that was just pure silliness and I laughed my ass off the whole time. Having said that, the Doubling Down episode was really smart and I love that one. And I really like this one because I think that although it may not have been the funniest episode, it definitely spurred on a really interesting, relevant conversation between the four of us. So I really love this one. I think that now that we live in such a weird time politically, ideologically, I prefer smarter episodes because I just think that, you know, it's time to discuss things. And I think South Park and, you know, dick and fart, really smart dick and fart jokes are a great way to do that. So I prefer smarter episodes today. If this was 2 years ago when things were less crazy, I would probably say probably more balanced between the two.
I think the show has got changed so much. Like I used to like just the one-off, almost, you know, just ridiculous kind of sitcom-y ones, like Jared's saying. But now the ones I like the most are the ones like this and Doubling Down, which to me feel like they almost feel like mini movies where they have like they have a momentum and every scene kind of matters to me. I know you guys didn't like this episode as much, but to me, this one was one of those episodes that just felt like every scene was kind of important and was building up to something, and then it built up to the fucking annihilation of Canada. But I really loved this kind of an episode, whatever you call it.
Sure. Amanda, do you have a take on this one?
Probably similar. I think, like, I'm here for the biting political satire, but also it has to just make me laugh.
I guess I am in the minority here because I definitely prefer the ones that are just like, let's see how many jokes we can fit in this thing. Who cares if it says anything smart? Let's just fucking rock and roll.
I respect that.
That's my whole shit. I mean, that's why I still watch Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera shit all the time.
You're in it purely for the farts.
Yeah, I mean, I like the social satire stuff, but like, I mean, to part the kimono, wisecrack wise, we talk about this shit all the time about everything. So it's like, I could use a break where it's just like, Siri put titty chips on my chopping list like that.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion point. Like, what media do I consume to relax and not think really hard? It's actually mostly video games. Video games are my relaxation because a lot of them are just, let's kill things. And yeah. That's relaxing to me.
In the words of my college thesis advisor, some days everything has to die. shouts out to Adam Rosen, the best professor in the entire world. This is from Songor from Transylvania. That's where my family's from.
That's insane.
I didn't know you were from Transylvania.
My family is. I mean, I'm from DC. I listened to your Moss Piglets episode and I asked some ideas about it that might sway you from your F- scores. This might be the weaker idea, but they're the first one. The first one is about water bears. I think South Park tries to represent one of two things, or the sort of silent majority of the people. People who just live, not going into politics or reacting to news, but just trying to live their lives in a sort of neutral, live and let live kind of way. Or this could also apply to children. These audiences who buy their mellowness enjoy objectively bad songs like the Taylor Swift song, not only has two notes in its chorus or cheap sounds sources of fun like the Hokey Pokey, catering to those audiences is basically what the NFL tries to do. I want to pause here to say that I think that, I don't know if I agree with this exact assessment, but I think there's a really smart thread here about like the tardigrades being unbreakable and undamageable as just like the NFL fan base. Like, that's what they want, is people who don't care and will never leave. And I think that's a very good point.
I like that.
Yeah.
Transylvania sounds chill.
So far, Transylvania is A+. It's about to sound less chill, though, because the second paragraph,
I can't think
is
of Transylvania without thinking of Castlevania. I just imagine it being like a giant Dracula-like castles everywhere.
I mean,
I'm sure it's not like that at all.
Well, email us again, Songor. Anyways, the second point is about Heidi. Me being from Transylvania and now studying in Germany, I'm exposed to news and politics from Romania, Hungary, Germany, and also loosely the UK and US. Politics in the EU, from my perspective, is way more nuanced from the sort of anti-Semitic perspective. While there is here a strong rise of far-right parties, even the traditional conservative ones start to show signs of anti-Semitism. A great example is just the government of Hungary, which has a large campaign against a Jewish millionaire right now. The point is, I think, you guys at Wisecrack are being a bit too black and white about Heidi, since there's probably a large uptick in anti-Semitism also in the traditional Republican base, and we don't consistently associate themselves with the alt-right, but are still horrible people on the right. In the episode Doubling Down, I think the creators just want to put her in that category, not just as someone on the alt-right. I think when the creators of South Park are saying in this episode is that Heidi represents the politicians who are horrible people on the right and Trump enables them. Sometimes they are there for years in the Senate or Parliament and the shadows are better at applying politics than Trump, and now is their time to shine. What do you guys think about that read? I find that pretty interesting.
I disagree with that read.
Go on.
Well, I don't really... If he's trying to say that anti-Semitism is broader than just the alt-right, then great. Now I can't sleep at night.
I am still really worried about that Jewish millionaire. Like, is he okay? I mean, I'm just kidding.
If someone could,
we have three Jews on this podcast right
now. No, I mean, I stick by what we said in the last episode or whatever that episode that was. I don't think Heidi is supposed to represent politicians. She's supposed to just represent some people on the right that suck.
All right.
Right.
I buy that. Yeah, that checks out with me. All right. Well, again, thank you everyone for your questions. They mean a lot. A lot of these questions also came with really nice compliments that I had to skip for time. So y'all, are good people and send very nice things to us.
We're going to read them to ourselves after this is over.
Yeah.
And whenever we need a self-esteem boost.
That's right. All right. Well, that's going to be it for today. I want to thank all my co-hosts for sitting here and gabbing with me. Also want to remind you guys about some of the other podcasts that we've got. We've still got our Rick and Morty podcast, The Squanch, that's going on. We're doing that every 2 weeks, so be sure to subscribe to that and check us out. Also want to remind you guys about Thug Notes Get Lit, in which Greg, a.k.a. Sparky Sweets PhD, is breaking down some of the best books ever written, so definitely check that out. And finally, I want to remind you guys that our movie podcast called Show Me the Meaning is now live. We actually launched with three movies. We launched with Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive, Darren Aronofsky's Mother, for those of you confused as hell by that movie, and a little wild card in there, the film Boss Baby, because we figured that we would launch with a variety of films, see what you guys like. We're also taking requests as to what movies you'd like to see us cover. So if you have some requests, please send them to movies@wisecrack.co. That's .co. I want to thank once again all my co-hosts for being here. And thanks a lot, guys. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Screw you guys. We're going back to my office.
All right. See you later, everyone.
Later, guys.